The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Is anybody sane anymore? Anyone? Anyone out there sane? I mean, I don't want to revisit Charlottesville again because we did that on the last show from last week, but right after all that happened, people are equivocating Antifa and Black Lives Matter, you know, Antifa, anti-fascist with fascist tactics and fascist tendencies, and Black Lives Matter, that amalgamation of socialist, communist, anti-American groups, Black Panther groups, FRSO, whatever, we're going to get into that in a little bit, they act like they're freedom fighters. They act like they're these innocent people. They're just an uprising. I had this discussion with this lady online. Black Lives Matter is a peaceful civil rights movement that millions of Americans support and has never killed anyone. Nah. Nah, never killed a cop. Never killed five of them in Texas. I mean, complete head in the sand or rear end, you pick. I mean, no matter where the location of her head was, she clearly hasn't researched anything on Black Lives Matter or Antifa. She said she participated and donated to them, but she has no idea the danger that she, you know, aided in. I mean, the narrative of the moment in the wake of the clash in Charlottesville seems to have been solidified with the progressive left, and it's been deployed by its media foot soldiers. The headlines, they are just filled with this assumption. These are the assumptions that these groups, Antifa or Antifa, or however you want to name, tomato, tomato, whatever, Black Lives Matter, these groups are just some ragtag team of freedom fighters, framed as being grassroots. You know, they're an uprising, a group comprised of good, upstanding citizens. You know, they've just been marginalized and decimated against and discriminated against. And even in the modern age, you know, there's no colored water fountains. You know, those must have all returned all of a sudden. Bull Connor must be out there pulling the hoses out on the streets to spray everybody, or only the, you know, the minorities. But the resistance is fighting back, because this time they feel nobody's helped them. Oh, imagine that. The police haven't helped you. Why is that? Maybe it's because you vilified them, targeted them, and made them look like they're the evil enemy, like they're the evil army. And they're fighting for democracy. And hold on to your nether regions, gang. When we get into the definition of democracy from their definition, it isn't what you and I think that it actually means. But anyways, and they do so firmly ensconced in the belief that there is no disparaging aid and agents and no corrupt groups with a bigger goal in mind embedded and hidden within their gaggle of freedom fighters. No, that wouldn't be the case at all. And the current mission for them is a hands-on vigilante vigilance. I mean, no need to make a 911 call for law enforcement to intercede on their behalf. The argument that they've used to justify the removal of your weapons, my weapons, our Second Amendment rights, our ability to own firearms, it's all been nullified by them instantaneously. You know, if the police should be the only ones with the guns and the only ones with the firearms because they're the good guys, well, now that they become the ethnicity Gestapo and they've been the enemy, well, then firearms, why do they need them? I mean, what's the point in them having armed law enforcement? They've poked holes in their own arguments in order to justify vigilante retribution. But that shouldn't be of any concern. I mean, history's going to show that if you have a plan, if you plan on having a free speech event at some point in time just to draw out the Antifa Black Lives Matter opposition in for a fight, don't do it in a Democrat-run municipality or locality or state, because they're going to order the authorities to, you know, the ones that are taxpayer-funded organizations for our protection, they're going to order them to stand down and allow mob rule. And they'll find inventive ways to nullify your peaceful protest and let jackbooted thugs just run roughshod all over your event. Maybe you might get killed. Maybe you might get hurt. Maybe you require staples and you're a, you know, Channel 9 news reporter. Now they're on the road looking to right the wrongs of humanity, traveling to Seattle and Durham and Boston and Washington, D.C., even Trump Tower, and they've come flag-waving, and a few fisticuffs, no biggie there. And while they're attempting to eradicate the sins of history, they're doing so with incredible fashion. They're offended by the blank stares of a Confederate statue that glares at them in judgmental ways. I mean, it's really all they can do. They're statues, for the love of God. They've placed fear in the hearts of municipalities who have removed these statues in the heat of the night without a referendum or it's, you know, void of a vote by its citizenry. They've told the police to stand down in order to refrain from inciting additional outrage and violence. They pulled down war memorial monuments with ropes, spray-painted statues. They're talking about bombing Mount Rushmore, removing statues of Frank Rizzo. Frank Rizzo! I mean, even bellyaching about the origin of the name of the state of New York. Let's go ahead and change that, since it was oppressive, I guess. And if you view the appeasement through their prism of language, then you'll know that there is no end in sight. I mean, not only do they feel they're fighting anyone who has owned a slave or even shook the hand of someone who has one, they also abhor American imperialism. So expect the next few targets to be World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War monuments because of imperialism. And this is Michelle Obama's declaration, declaring that we must change our traditions, change our cultures. Remember that?
Barack knows that we are going to have to make sacrifices. We are going to have to change our conversation. We're going to have to change our traditions, our history. We're going to have to move into a different place.
And that's what they're doing. Only they couldn't do it through a gradual erosion with, you know, 4 to 8 years of Hillary Clinton. They have to do it with brute force because they now have a different set of foster parents in charge. You know, the left and the right are divided because of their views of who allocates freedom, who allocates, your ability to do as you want. Is it the government? Does the government allocate the freedom, or does it come down from our creator? And when it comes down to the fact that the right looks at it from natural rights given to us by our creator, well, then we don't really care as much about who's in charge because it doesn't really affect who's governing us. But the left looks at it as, oh, the government's in charge because God is their government. And now the foster parents have been replaced. So the kids are having a hissy fit tantrum. They're burning the bed sheets. They're getting in arguments with their foster parents in charge, and they're, you know, sneaking out in the night and causing riots in the streets. And, you know, now we have to deal with the fact that they are just losing their ever freaking loving minds, and they don't know how to cope with the fact that the people in charge are not doing whatever they say and giving them whatever they want. So on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about who's involved with Black Lives Matter, who are the agents involved with it, and uncover the real truth behind the amalgamation that comprises this anti-American Black Panther movement. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Who is Black Lives Matter? And on top of that, who are they connected to? Some of that is going to scare the bejesus out of you. Now, Black Lives Matter, they want to say, oh, it's an organic movement. You just popped up with Trayvon Martin, you know, back in 2014. George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin, and we decided we had enough. Well, actually, it's a lot more to it than that. It's a well-funded communist socialist organization pretending to be a new movement. And this is from World Net Daily. A movement that has been in existence for decades. Communist groups have manipulated the cause of Black Lives Matter, and money from many liberal foundations have made it possible. This is all from the World Net Daily story. Except for the website, Black Lives Matter really doesn't have much organization to that particular name. There's a website, and it basically acknowledges this fact. It describes Black Lives Matter as an online forum intended to build connections between black people and our allies to fight anti-black racism, to spark dialogue among black people, and to facilitate the types of connections necessary to encourage social engagement and action. Now, these are old tactics. I mean, you could go back to the CPUSA days of anywhere from even the 30s up until into the 60s, Communist Party USA. Larry Garthwal, former FBI informant inside the Weather Underground. He understood from personal experience how white communists exploited blacks and other minorities and stated that the Weather Underground terrorists, Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorham, who regarded Barack Obama as a tool, a political career that they could turn into a tool and a puppet to be used against white America, were involved with this uprising. Now, like I said, it began back in 2013, the hashtag Black Lives Matter, after George Zimmerman was acquitted in the killing of Trayvon Martin out of self-defense. And radical leftists have claimed credit for the slogan and hashtags, three in particular, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Paul Tometi. They all work for the front groups, the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, or the FRSO. It's one of the four largest radical left organizations in the country. The others are, like I said before, CPUSA, Communist Party USA, Democratic Socialist of America, DSA, Committees of Correspondence in Democracy and Socialism, CCDS. A hereditary descendant of the new communist movement are these four movements, and they are inspired by Mao and the many communist revolutions throughout the world in the 1960s and 70s. Now, FRSO split into two separate groups in 1999. There's FRSO/Fight Back, and there's FRSO/OSCL, which stands for Freedom Road Socialist Organization, or Organización Solicita del Camanion para la Libertad. FRSO is comprised of a dozen mini-groups, and the goal is to present the appearance of a formidable mass of organizations. Some of these groups are large, some are small, no more than a Facebook page, but they are dedicated to ultimately the same thing, overthrowing our society in order to replace it with hardcore socialist or communist ones. FRSO membership is disproportionately represented by blacks, gays, and women, and self-consciously emphasizes those issues. Now, Alicia Garza, she penned the book, Her Story of Black Lives Matter. And not only did she do that, she is a self-proclaimed queer black veteran activist involved in numerous FRSO organizations, such as Special Projects Director, National Domestic Workers Alliance, NDWA, Executive Director, People Organized to Win Employment Rights, which is POWER, Board Member of School of Unity and Liberation, SOUL, 2011 Board Chair, Right to the City Alliance, RTTC. There's Patrice Cullors, describes herself as a working-class queer black woman, claims that the United States killed her father, who was a drug addict, founded and directs Dignity and Power Now, or DPN, was trained by Eric Mann, a former Weather Underground leader who exhorts followers to become anti-racist and anti-imperialist activists. Now, Eric Mann runs another FRSO front, the Labor/Community Strategy Center. He makes about $225,000 annually to protest. What a good gig. I wish I got paid that kind of money just to hate America. Paul Tometi, the daughter of illegal aliens from Nigeria. She has worked with the ACLU defending illegal aliens against vigilantes opposed to illegal immigration. She's currently the executive director of Black Alliance for Just Immigration, or BAJI. Now, following the Michael Brown shooting in August of 2014, the group Dream Defenders formed the Hands Up, Don't Shoot slogan. And that organization, Dream Defenders, is led by a couple other bigger organizations, such as Working Families Party, ACORN activist group, and Occupy Wall Street anarchist Nalini Stamp. Now, Nalini Stamp's ACORN group, now rebranded under a variety of different names, works with all the four organizations we talked about earlier. Now, Stamp has said, "We are trying to change the capitalist system we have today because it's not working for any of us." Now, Dream Defenders is backed by SEIU, Service Employees International Union, the ACLU, and the Southern Poverty Law Center. The most interesting thing is, how do they get their funding? Their funding is immeasurable. FRSO and Black Lives Matter organizations are generously funded by a universe of wealthy foundations. Some are directly funded. Others are financed by organizations designed specifically to underwrite the activities of others. Amounts reflected in the donations received over the approximate decade they run the gamut. NDWA, in 2013, revenues were $5.5 million. Their board includes two members of Casa de Maryland, another organization fighting for illegals. It's the illegals version of ACORN. And CASA received a grant from NDWA back in 2013, as did the Radical Left Institute for Policy Studies. Many have donated to NDWA, such as Ben and Jerry's, $30,000. Ford, $1,910,000. Kellogg's, $250,000. And then when you go further down the list, you see Soros funds, $1,344,846. I don't know if I should be more alarmed that Ford donated more to NDWA than George Soros. But anyways, Power, the other group we talked about earlier, 2013 revenues, $456,676 back in 2013. And their list includes Ben & Jerry's, $62,000, California Wellness, $300,000, and the Tides Foundation, $168,000. This is just to name a few. Obama's former green job czar, self-described communist Van Jones, served on the board, and it evolved from the now-defunct communist group STORM, standing together to organize a revolutionary movement. There's also RTTC. The revenues for 2013, $248,900, and it also was a network of activist organizations that resist the gentrification of inner cities because it displaces, quote, low-income people, people of color, marginalized LGBTQ communities, and youths of color. Ben & Jerry's, $25,000. Ford, $1,325,000. Soros Funds, $600,000. Tides Fund, $165,000, just to name a few. So now we know that Black Lives Matter is not an organic movement at all. It's a collection of communist front groups all vying for something bigger than just Black Lives Matter. What's interesting is what is happening with ISIS and Black Lives Matter. ISIS is trying to either recruit from Black Lives Matter, take disaffected black gentlemen, and push them towards lone wolf terrorism, or they're getting into bigger cahoots. CARE has actually joined up with it. Islamic organizations have also jumped on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon. Back in 2015, the Muslim Brotherhood front group Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, joined Black Lives Matter in storming California Governor Jerry Brown's office. CARE also participated in the Ferguson protest, and ISIS is recruiting American blacks for its cause. But they are working together. Check this out. From an article written about a Black Lives Matter activist who was a part of the Ferguson riots, posted a visual guide to urban riot wear in both English and Arabic on Twitter. This is from an article that I read over the weekend. The tweet is significant because it's posted by Ashley Yates, who uses the handle @BrownBlaze on Twitter. Yates is a prominent protest organizer in the Black Lives Matter movement who is an advocate for violence. The Guardian newspaper quoted her in 2014 during her involvement with the Ferguson protest as saying, "If they can't serve justice in this, the people have every right to go out and express their rage in a manner that is equal to what we have suffered," said Yates, the co-founder of Millennial Activist United, who was arrested last week while protesting in Ferguson. Yates learned organizing when she was the political chair of the Legion of Black Collegians at the University of Missouri, Columbia, the group who was behind last year's campus uprising there. Yates was not with the group at the time of that protest, by the way. Now, under the title Necessary Clothing and Accessories, there is a picture guide that suggests wearing a sweatshirt or leather jacket with a hood. This helps shield your face from tear gas. Spray paint so that if the authorities attack us, we can spray paint the visors of their helmets and windshields of their armored trucks, blocking their vision, hindering their movement. Protective glasses can be bought at any metal workshopping or paint shop. The lid of a pot, you can use this shield when security beats you or shoots rubber bullets at you. A scarf to protect your mouth and lungs from tear gas. Thick rubber gloves in order to protect your hands from the heat of tear gas containers, and shoes that make it easy to run and move quickly. Now, the interesting thing about this was they get into the Republican National Convention coming up very soon. Black Lives Matter founder Patrice Cullors, who we talked about earlier, promised to shut down the Republican National Convention, which is held this summer. MSNBC last year asked Cullors, and Cullors said, "Many folks have asked, why would you go after the Democrat Party? They're on our side. What about the Republican Party? And trust and believe that any opportunity we have to shut down the Republican convention, we will. And we will make sure that our voices are made loud and clear." The interesting part is those instructions. The picture graph on the clothing to wear, also posted in Arabic. Now, why would that be the case? Would that be the case because ISIS is looking to co-opt Black Lives Matter into violence? And what happens when ISIS and Black Lives Matter intersect? What happens when it gets to a point where a Somali nationalist, maybe he's a Somali terrorist living in Dearborn, huge Somali population, they're African. They can be misidentified with an African-American gentleman in a neighborhood. And if they go to attack and commit terrorism and it's thwarted by a cop, what happens then? Do we get protests in the streets over a dead Somali terrorist as the news media pretends it to be a giant unarmed black male killed by cops, police brutality narrative?
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Well, it looks as though while we're trying to quell the anger and emotions by removing statues in the middle of the night, you know, smashing 200-year-old Columbus memorials based on Howard Zinn propaganda textbooks and, you know, removing Asian sportscasters from ESPN broadcast of UVA college football games because their name is Robert Lee. Serious. When I saw that, I first thought, can't wait for talk of ESPN removing Robert Lee when it goes from his name might offend to, well, he's Asian, to not all Asians are named Lee, you racist. I mean, it is that absurd. But when we're doing all of this in order to try to quell some, you know, national outrage that I really don't even think truly exists, we have to realize that Antifa is still on the march. By the way, I think ESPN just announced Jabal Bankhead Davis will be moved from covering any sort of college football game to covering Little League Baseball from here on out. So that's good to know. But Antifa showed up for Heather Hare's funeral, the young lady that was killed in the car attack by the white supremacist in Charlottesville. Now, I say this not to minimize her death, so hear me out. And I talk about this. I don't want this to be looked at as she, you know, that she should be killed for her beliefs, that her life should have been taken away because she believes in Bernie Sanders, as you look at her Facebook page. But if you listen to a video, because obviously I'm a free speech, I'm as free speech as it gets. Believe what you want to believe and live it. I provide this simply as a perspective, because what we're getting from the media is, well, Black Lives Matter is just a group of people that are marching for civil rights, which last segment shows is a collection of newly branded, but the same old Black Panther, Black Liberation Theology, anti-American communist groups. And the same thing is happening with Antifa. They're being painted as these noble freedom fighters. And we're going to get into Antifa here in just a second. But we must realize that Ms. Hare was extremely close to one of the Antifa activists, by the Antifa activist's own words.
I walk the street that mowed down that woman every single day for 13 years. I worked in Charlottesville. I had all my friends in Charlottesville. I booked shows in Charlottesville. I know the woman who was hit and killed by Nazis. So today, when all of us scary anarchists who cover our faces because we don't want to get seen at work, or we don't want idiots like you that record our faces to expose who we are, because we fight Nazis. We punch them, we hurt them, we prevent them from having a platform. You failed us. All of you who stood by when we were like, please, please follow us. The Nazis are that way. The Nazis are that way. F*** your f***ing constitution. F*** your liberal Bernie bull. We are here to fight Nazis. And if you're not here to throw down and actually fight Nazis, you're masturbating in the street so that you can feel good about yourself.
So I'm not sure how innocent she was. I don't think she was just strolling through downtown Charlottesville in the middle of the riot and suddenly, you know, in the middle of the protest, killed by a speeding car by a white nationalist in a Dodge Charger. I think she might have actually been a part of Antifa. Who knows? But what is Antifa? Fairly similarly to Black Lives Matter, Antifa isn't an organization. It's considered a decentralized movement. Antifa is just a name but it's a collection and amalgamation of groups just like Black Lives Matter. It's all of these little cells that converge under the banner of Antifa. Now, Antifa traces its roots back to the 1920s and 30s, militant leftists battling fascists in the streets of Germany, Italy, and Spain. Of course, fascism kind of withered after World War II, and so did Antifa. They took a break. And in the 1970s and 80s, neo-Nazi skinheads began to infiltrate the British punk scene. And after the Berlin Wall fell, neo-Nazism gained prominence in Germany. And in response, a lot of young leftists, including anarchists and punk fans, revived the tradition on street-level anti-fascism. And in the 1980s and into the 90s, and I remember this really well, left-wing punk fans in the United States began following suit. I remember I was a part of the 80s, early 90s punk hardcore scene, and we had the Nazi skinheads, and we had the other side of the coin, the Sharps, the skinheads against racial prejudice. And they clashed with each other all the time. By the way, if you'd like to subscribe to support the show, go to patreon.com/AdrianSladeShow. That's patreon.com. That's patreon.com/AdrianSladeShow. For $2 a month, the price of one of those new Coke Zero sugars you might snag out of the cooler on the checkout aisle of the grocery store, you can get to hear the show in advance before it's released to the public. You get exclusive Adrian Slade Show quick rant shows that will not be available to the public. They're basically drilled down one current event topic podcast about the length of a segment of a show. And you'll also get what I'm thinking about starting up, which is the monthly Adrian Slade Show music matinee. It's going to be based on music. If you know me personally, you know I've always been called a music nerd. And one of the things that dovetails with this whole Nazi skinhead, 80s, 90s, neo-Nazi, Sharps clashing was the punk hardcore scene of the 80s and 90s that I was talking about. Many don't realize that that was all just a reaction to the revolt against the bloated commercial rock scene, which was a progressive totalitarian corporatism. It was an oligarchy of corporations that were run by progressives of the 70s and 80s. Artists had to, if the artists wanted to get into the game, if they wanted to get into the machine of getting a contract, getting the music played, becoming famous and turning a career into their music, they had to cede their intellectual property of their music for the rights. You know, they'd have to sign a contract, they'd have to get a loan, and that loan was used to record and sell merchandise and fund the tours, and then they'd have to recoup that money back. Hollywood record producers, Rolling Stone magazine, Cream magazine writers, radio stations being bribed by record producers via payola. I mean, it was all just a big ruse. And the punk scene was a direct-to-consumer, from artist-to-consumer relationship. They made just low-budget music. They passed it around on tapes. The Bay Area thrash scene took that bloated glam metal corporate, you know, classic rock sound and fused it into hardcore and punk and did the same thing. So if you like what I'm talking about on the music side and how it's viewed through politics as well, I'm going to be issuing that as well. $2 a month. I mean, it's not much at all. You can probably get a Dorito taco for that. So go to patreon.com/AdrianSladeShow, $2 a month subscription, and I thank you in advance. But it was never focused at a political ideology. They didn't pick a political side. They weren't like, well, we're the Nazi skinheads, so we're on the right, and we're the Sharps, skinheads against racial prejudice, and we're on the left. They never picked a side. In fact, they didn't have a preference. Most of them chose anarchy and railed against the government across the board. So that should say something about today's political party. Here are some of the cell groups that make up the puzzle of Antifa. Direct Action Alliance, comprised of Bernie PDX, which is a Portland, Oregon group. Seventh Generation Environmental Alliance. Then there's BAM, that's By Any Means Necessary, funded by the United for Equality and Affirmative Action Legal Defense Fund, which is a 501c3 organization registered to Donna Stern, and she's the organizer. That money is funneled through the UEAALDF to BAM, and then over to whatever Antifa organization or Antifa need is addressed. The donors list includes the Ford Foundation, the Southern Poverty Law Center, to which George Clooney and his wife just gave a huge, sizable million-dollar donation to in order to, quote, stop the hate, right? The UAW International, which is a union. The various teachers' unions and organizations. In fact, Yvette Felisara, that we talked about a few shows back, the middle school teacher, she was involved with violent protests at Berkeley, and she is a semi-public BAM spokeswoman. She was arrested at the Battle for Berkeley, and she, among others, tried to indoctrinate and recruit students for activism, from the Daily Caller. Despite repeated warnings, the district says Yvette Felisara continued to try to recruit students into her radical organization, including during work hours. Felisara frequently tried to bring students on school-sponsored trips to BAM-related activities, which the district claimed were attempts to indoctrinate the students, according to Berkeley Side. Now, BAM is even tied to NAMBLA. Imagine that. Also from the Daily Caller. BAM's parent organization worked directly with the National American Man-Boy Love Association in the years just before it founded BAM, according to NAMBLA documents reviewed by the Daily Caller. In addition, a member of that parent organization said to have founded BAM is an admitted member of NAMBLA, which she has described as being the victim of a witch hunt, founded by the Revolutionary Workers League. Anytime you hear workers, that's code word right there, workers or peoples, that is typically a socialist code word, and you can just dig in by Googling, or I wouldn't Google these days. I would DuckDuckGo some of these organizations' names, and it'll just give you a plethora of information. But the Revolutionary Workers League, a small Detroit-based Marxist organization, many of BAM's leaders and leading members over the years have also been the members of that Revolutionary Workers League. Quote, the Revolutionary Workers League is a Trotskyist organization of which I'm a member, Luke Massey, one of the BAM founders, told Michigan Daily in 2001. By the way, Trotskyism is the theory of Marxism as advocated by Leon Trotsky. Trotsky identified himself as an Orthodox Marxist and Bolshevik Leninist. So there you go. We are proud to have played a part in a whole lot of struggles, to have played a role in the founding of BAM, is what he said. An anonymous group of researchers provided copies of internal NAMBLA publications from the 1990s. Internet sleuths requested anonymity, citing fear of retaliation by BAM members, and asked instead to be collectively referred to as the shadowy or mysterious organization known as Antifa Leaks. There were other members, Shanta Driver, which is they were a labor activist and labor lawyer, Antifa activist, member of BAM. Then outside of BAM, there is Mike Wilson, national leader of Antifa, works at UC Berkeley as a researcher. Mark Ergood, another national leader of Antifa, works as a special education teacher, currently running for leadership in the National Teachers Union. Benjamin Lynch, in charge of organizing protests across the nation. And then there's James Anderson Ferguson, editor for It's Going Down, an Antifa-aligned journal. It's also a website that gives information on where and what functions will occur. He basically encompassed Antifa as a politicized fighting culture, which is emerging, fueled by cheerleaders on both sides. He said, this SHIT is fun. So he gets a rise out of this all. Going on, there's the Oregon Students Empowered Group, who created a Facebook page called Shut Down Fascism, No Nazis in Portland. There's the Torch Network, who organizes boycotts. And the best part is the World Workers' Party, which goes hand in hand with Antifa. Most members are part of this party. Their platform is unbelievable. I mean, listen to this. They want a socialist society where the wealth is socially owned. Production and services are planned to satisfy human needs. It is all for the workers of the world, from Cuba to China. Wow, that's a great span. They want to build a socialist nation within the United States, which would allow for international Marxism and socialist societies to flourish without the impediment of America. They want to, quote, abolish capitalism, disarm the police, disarm the ICE agents, fight for socialist revolution, and defend Black Lives Matter, which at this point, they did say Charlottesville was their watershed moment, and now after Black Lives Matter turned on Antifa, they're now distancing themselves from them. They also have what is called the John Brown Gun Club. So they have a group of open carry, which you probably saw at the Trump rally. They wear the brown shirts. They walk around with their open carry weapons. They're allies of Antifa. They are a left-wing militia. And then, of course, you have the Alliance for Global Justice, listed as the organizer of the event at Berkeley, who were also assisted by Refuse Fascism, which is the communist group that encouraged left-wingers to shut down that Milo Yiannopoulos event that we covered a few months ago, which you can listen on old podcasts. They were also present at the G20 protest. So obviously, they've got international arms in nature. According to the Alliance for Global Justice nonprofit 990 tax filings, which is basically the nonprofit's version of your individual 1040 tax return, the Tides Foundation gave $50,000 to the group, who is funded by George Soros. And if you remember back when he failed to pay the protesters, where the hashtag cut the check was trending online and there was videos of protesters out there going, give us our money, George Soros. I mean, so I don't think he came through, but the plan was to pay these people since, I mean, what are they doing now? Nothing. I mean, they're sitting around in mommy's basement hoping that they can get that good gig that they were promised after they graduated college with a $100,000 student loan for that fashion studies degree. They're now planning a protest, a nationwide protest that you need to write on your calendar for November 4th for sedition. And it's going to be unrelenting chaos in the streets across the nation from what they said. So November 4th, write that down. And they get their resources from some various different places outside of It's Going Down. Also, Crimeth Inc., known as CWC or Crimeth Inc. X Workers Collective. It's a decentralized anarchist collective. It emerged in the 1990s. The group is involved with movement of produced items such as books, records, organized national campaigns against globalization, or more importantly, they say global capitalism, and they're against representative democracy. They believe that direct action is an effective tool, which is basically taking matters into your own hands. We've been seeing direct action everywhere. And this was reinforced when that one Antifa activist climbed to remove a state flag and did so right there in the face of the police, and the police did nothing. From that point on, that became their modus operandi. And the Black Bloc, which is a method of protest attack, pushing dumpsters as battering rams through police lines. This is what Antifa is, a collection of anti-American socialist Marxist groups, communist in nature, right in line with Black Lives Matter. This is basically, if you look at it, this is all rebranding. These groups have existed for decades. I mean, Black Lives Matter is Black Panthers. Antifa is basically your 60s radicals. And they're now doing this to encourage the youth to overthrow the government because they don't like the fact that somebody else is in charge and they can't have their socialism implemented through Bernie Sanders or Barack Obama. Now we're going to get into who the white nationalists are because they're not getting a pass either on the other side of the break.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Somebody that you
assume
is a neo-Nazi. You cannot do that. He is on our side.
Do not do that.
Just sit down.
Yeah,
here we are.
I'm
going to get you a medic.
Water?
Yeah, I've got rubbing alcohol.
You're
going
to need to wipe that up. I can't.
Hold
the tissue on there.
Well, what are you here for today? And what are you expecting? Are you going to stay around?
I'm not exactly sure right now.
Now, while Antifa is busy beating the crap out of each other, their own people, that's what you just heard right there, and on top of it, Black Lives Matter is beating them up as well, we have to look at the white nationalists. Who are the white nationalists? If you go back to a show that we did called Culture Alt-Right Delete, we actually went through the alt-right's history and the philosophers. It was all based on that Breitbart article they put up there about the guide to the alt-right. But it seems to be that this could possibly be a proxy war between Soros and the Democrats, because Soros is funding it, but get that out of your mind that he's the only one pulling these strings, okay? That's usually the meme that we have, the picture that we have painted in our mind when we think about the bad, big bad, you know, globalist theory, we always go, oh, it's Soros. Well, Soros is donating money, but he's not the only one. But it seems like Soros, the progressives, the socialists, they are fighting a proxy war with Vladimir Putin. Because Vladimir Putin is overseeing or has his hands involved in all of these nationalist movements all across the world, not just in America. Business Insider has an article entitled, "A Model for Civilization, Putin's Russia Has Emerged as a Beacon for Nationalists and the American Alt-Right." From the article, "Whether Russia has played a direct role in awakening the American alt-right is debatable. Self-described white nationalist Matthew Heimbach, who has said he identifies as a member of the alt-right, has praised Putin's Russia as the axis of nationalists. Quote, I really believe that Russia is the leader of the free world right now, Heimbach told the Business Insider in a recent interview. Putin is supporting nationalists around the world and building an anti-globalist alliance while promoting traditional values and self-determination. Heimbach described the U.S. current foreign policy as aggressive and imperialistic, and he criticized NATO's military buildup in Eastern Europe as an example of how the U.S. is trying to promote global conflict. And he views Russia as a model of civilization and a beacon for nationalists. Quote, this isn't just a European or a right-wing movement, he said. We are trying to position ourselves to be part of a worldwide movement of globalism versus nationalism. It's a new age. Like Heimbach, alt-right leader Richard Spencer, the head of the white nationalist think tank National Policy Institute, has argued that the U.S. dispensed with its globalist policies by pulling out of NATO, resetting its relationship with Russia, courting Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, whom he described as a civilized person and, quote, source of stability in this chaotic world. Now, Heimbach is the head of the white supremacist group Traditionalist Youth Movement. You might remember them from the 2013 Quran burning barbecue that they wanted to do on September 11th of that year. Aside from the Quran barbecue, Heimbach and Parrott recently passed out flyers in the town of Perry, Michigan, advertising traditionalist youth movement. And Perry is 12 miles south of Owosso, where traditionalist youth movement has a P.O. box. This is from an article covering that Quran burning event. The flyers handed out by Heimbach and Parrott attack conservatives for being surprised when feminism, globalism, open borders, radical Islam, and anti-white racism always end up winning. Flyers also allege that the left hates us because we represent a genuine threat to cultural Marxists and organized Jewry and global capitalism. So it's a bit deeper than just simply alt-right. We have to look at the fact that the white nationalists they're white supremacists. This is no different. You know, you can rebrand things all you want. You can call Black Lives Matter what it is, even though it's the Black Panthers. You can call Antifa what it is, even though it's just the 60s radicals and goes back to the Bolsheviks. You can call the alt-right what it is when within the alt-right, there is a core white nationalist movement. But there are people within the fringes of the alt-right that are moderate that may not be as white nationalist. So we have to keep that in mind, though. The nationalists converge on many areas. Identitarianism, which is another snazzier term for basically white supremacy. All of the philosophers and leaders that they have look up to Nazi and Marxist ideology. I mean, Oswald Spengler, H.L. Mencken, Julius Evola. I mean, they all do. And they all align with the Golden Dawn Party in Greece, which is a neo-Nazi party that is being guided by Vladimir Putin. He has his hands all in it. And Richard Spencer, he's a self-described identitarian, promotes white euphemist views. From Breitbart, it said the media empire of the modern-day alternative right coalesced around Richard Spencer during his editorship at Takai's magazine. In 2010, Richard Spencer founded alt-right or alternativeright.com, which would become the center of the alt-right thought. Now, keep in mind, Richard Spencer's wife, who he was married to until 2016, is a Russian writer and self-proclaimed Kremlin troll leader who's writing under the pen name Nina Byzantina, regularly aligns with Kremlin talking points. She is also noted as being Alexander Dugin, who is Putin's advisor and responsible for everything that's going on in the world, her translator. And Dugin is a puppet master for chaos and coordination with the nationalist movements around the globe. And Alexander Dugin also met with Preston Wigington. He is a white supremacist leader who is a part of the alt-right who also tried to set up an event on September 11th coming up at Texas A&M. And the reason for why he said he decided he wanted to do that was because he felt that it was a desired location because he wants to address the upcoming American generations. He said Texas A&M students are nonviolent, and he believes local police will protect students and demonstrators from anyone disruptive. Which, you know, of course, if you plan on doing some sort of protest, find the one place in Texas that is going to be the most liberal. Right there, and, you know, let's just go to Austin, Texas, and throw down. But we can see that you've got on one side the Muslim Brotherhood, Linda Sarsour, marching with these Antifa people, trying to destabilize and collapse the system for a new government system. You've got La Raza trying to balkanize the country. You've got Black Lives Matter trying to get some sort of reparations and demanding your land. And then on the other side of the coin, you've got white nationalists being orchestrated by Vladimir Putin under the tutelage of Alexander Dugin, the professor from Russia, who is Vladimir Putin's right-hand man. And you've got him in all the white and all the nationalist movements across the globe. So we've got to be strong in our convictions, strong in our values and principles. Keep your eyes on the Constitution and look out for your fellow man, because it's going to get hairy. November 4th is going to be something to look towards. It could be a turning point, but let's pray that God intercedes and that we look to a quelling of all of these sides. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.